Chapter 3, Co-Creating Spaces of Belonging on Campus, a workshop for learners, teachers, staff, and community members. Throughout my doctoral journey, my scholarly identity has come to include teaching as an important element alongside research expertise. I include this chapter in the dissertation to highlight the importance of teaching scholarship and scholarly teaching. In this chapter, I provide a workshop outline and a brief discussion of evidence in which the design is based. This workshop is designed to share the knowledge I have gained through the process and research involved in this dissertation to enable academic stakeholders to implement strategies that may foster belonging. After the outline, I provide more discussion and description of the novel use of research-based theater, RBT, as an affective teaching tool. Affective, involving emotions, beliefs, and values. This RBT, I Know I Belong When, Stories of Authenticity, Performance, and Burdens, is based on conversations with 35 blind and partially blind people from across North America, whose stories also contributed to Chapter 2 of this dissertation. The reader can expect to find that the latter part of this chapter includes evidence regarding RBT's effectiveness from both the literature and from feedback given by people who have participated in the workshops. The final portion of the workshop outline is the RBT script that is used in the workshop and which is based on research done as part of this dissertation. Please refer to Chapter 2 for details regarding the methods used in the focus groups that contribute to the content of the RBT. At the time of writing this dissertation, this workshop has been facilitated twice in person with one virtual workshop scheduled. Participants have included teachers, assistants, students, faculty members, and staff members from across campus at the University of British Columbia. It is an optional workshop and is not graded or given for credit, and is typically 2 or 3 hours long and has included between 6 and 40 people. Section 3.1, Workshop Design. This workshop was shaped by different kinds of knowledge from various sources: my research, personal and professional experiences, literature, and feedback from previous workshop participants. My professional and personal values as a teacher influenced this workshop's design. These values include collaboration, equity, inclusion, and integrity. By collaboration, I mean working together as learners and teachers toward learning. Equity, I believe that all humans are of equal value and deserve to have equitable opportunities. That is, humans have the same value, but should not necessarily be treated the same way. To have equitable opportunities, individuals might need to go about learning in different ways. When thinking about inclusion, I am thinking of including diverse ways of being in and perceiving the world. I also invite diversity of perspectives and use various teaching approaches to meet diverse ways of understanding and knowing. Finally, I value the integrity of learners and my own integrity. In valuing learners as whole beings and acknowledging that they are more than just students or learners, I am valuing their integrity as individuals. Through my invocation of the word integrity in reference to myself, I indicate that it is important for me to maintain honesty and humility, especially when I do not know something. Congruence between my values and the ways I respectfully interact, and adherence to ethics. In this workshop, my objectives as a teacher include 1. To facilitate the co-creation of collaborative, diverse, inclusive, and respectful learning environments. 2. To remain humble and ready to learn. 3, to challenge learners to enter critical reflection and engage in transformational learning that will lead to action. And 4, to equip learners with basic strategies, knowledge, and skills related to facilitating welcoming environments. Educational theories and concepts underlying the workshop's design include transformational learning, constructivism, active learning, and universal design for learning, UDL. As a teacher, I hope to both engage in and facilitate transformational learning, which involves perspective transformation. Transformation involves, quote, structural change in the way we see ourselves and our relationships with other actors and with the wider world and its structures. Mesereau, 1978, page 100. This leads to transformed and wider perspectives, which in turn contributes to more informed choices or behaviors and occupational engagement. By presenting challenging ideas and alternate perspectives in novel ways, I encourage learners to examine their assumptions. I also invite learners to join me in the creation of interdependent learning communities where we all can be challenged to engage in critical reflection. Drawing on Freire's 1970 critical pedagogy, I hope that learners will not only experience personal transformation as they examine previously held assumptions, but also that they will act on their learning. Through praxis, a process of reflection and action that synthesizes theory and action, learners can become part of transforming oppressive realities. An initial step in my teaching is co-creating a welcoming learning space. In doing so, I recognize learner autonomy to advocate for their learning needs. For example, at the beginning of the Co-Creating Spaces of Belonging on Campus workshop, I invite learners to co-create a space that is conducive to their learning and to do what they need to in order to learn well. For example, I invite learners to stand, sit, or move around as needed and model this by standing, sitting, and moving around as I need. I also bring stories of my experience as a disabled healthcare professional and academic into the classroom as a way of challenging common assumptions and demonstrating vulnerability and effective use of personal story as a pedagogical tool. Co-creation of an effective learning space is important from a constructivist, transformational, and trauma-informed learning perspectives. In this workshop, as in all teaching and learning spaces, belonging is an important factor for learning. We need to feel valued, share in one another's transformation, and know that our contributions are valued. We need to find a sense of belonging in the learning space. Using paired and small group exercises builds connections between learners, opens space for many voices, and accelerates learning through sharing of ideas. Of note, although I can employ strategies as a facilitator to engender a learning environment like this, I recognize that inviting shared control of space does not change structural power hierarchies that exist among participants and between myself and participants. Constructivist learning theory postulates that learners build knowledge actively in the context of previous knowledge and social experiences. In the workshop, I facilitate active learning through a variety of evidence-based activities, such as paired and group discussion, interactive lecturing, and scenario-based learning. Although being told the answer may seem easier in some instances, the creation of a constructive and challenging environment is ultimately better for learning. For example, rather than providing a list of problems and solutions, I use scenarios and discussion to encourage critical thinking, collaboration, resource seeking, knowledge application in both solving and reframing, quote, problems. Throughout the workshop, learners are not passive recipients of, but rather are co-constructors of knowledge. In keeping with a constructivist approach, my role as a teacher reflects being a facilitator of knowledge co-construction, rather than an expert transmitting information into the minds of learners. Flexibility allows more space for learners to collaborate in building knowledge. Flexibility aligns with both constructivism and UDL. The workshop is designed to allow for the greatest possible degree of flexibility in the means of representation, expression, and engagement. In section 3.3, I describe the goal for each activity and one option for the structure of the activity. Flexibility is incorporated as I plan multiple options for learning activities in order to adapt to participant needs. I also use multiple means of representation of information, such as giving information verbally and visually. For example, the goals of an activity may be to provide space for participants to begin reflecting on their existing knowledge and to start thinking about some important topics related to the experience of disability. The activity used in this outline is a virtual quiz. The facilitator shows questions on screen, participants can read the question on their own device, and the facilitator reads the question aloud, providing multiple means of accessing information. The activity's goals could also be met using a paper-based quiz or self-reflection guided by questions or something else. Section 3.2, Workshop Learning Objectives. By the end of this workshop, participants will be able to 1. Apply knowledge from this workshop and previous experiences to discuss what disability is, including appropriate and inappropriate terms to use. 2. Describe some barriers disabled people experience to belonging in academia. 3. Discuss respectful ways to interact with disabled people. 4. Identify at least 3 strategies for making your own places of teaching and learning more welcoming to disabled people. 5. Reflect greater appreciation for some of the nuances of the realities of blind people in academia and how some of these concepts may extend to other equity-seeking groups. Section 3.3, Workshop Outline. Please peruse the workshop outline found as Table 2 within Appendix B. The workshop was developed based on the theories and knowledge described in Section 3.1. My experience facilitating workshops with the Center for Teaching, Learning, and Technology at UBC, particularly instructional skills workshops, also played a role in my learning that led to the structure and learning activities used for this workshop. I will now describe Appendix B, Table 2, Co-Creating Spaces of Belonging on Campus workshop outline. There are 3 columns in this table. Column 1 is the activity and objective addressed. Column 2 is the activity's goal. Column 3 is the activity description. Row 1, pre-assessment. To provide participants and facilitator an opportunity to gauge how participants are feeling regarding the workshop content. The activity, as they arrive, participants rate their comfort with discussing disability from very comfortable to very uncomfortable by placing a sticky note on a line. Second activity, introductions. Goal is to begin creating a collaborative learning space by getting to know one another and to model practices of solidarity and decolonization. The activity, after reading aloud some of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's 94 calls to action, participants introduce themselves by stating their name, pronouns preferred for the space, traditional territory they're from, and if their access needs are being met. Next activity is learning objectives and agenda. Goal is to provide participants with a framework for the remainder of the workshop, giving structure and predictability in line with the trauma-informed teaching principle of trustworthiness. This is done by learning objectives and agenda for the workshop are posted and read aloud, and questions are invited. The objectives and agenda are used are also sent to registered participants before the workshop. Next activity is co-creating a hospitable space. The goal of this activity is to establish a space in which participants feel more comfortable to share, to learn, to make mistakes. We cannot create a truly safe space, but we can promote a greater sense of comfort. Here we have a virtual option for the activity. Prior to the workshop, participants add to 3 virtual corkboards responding to the prompts related to making the workshop a more hospitable learning space. Prompt 1, how a hospitable learning space feels, looks, sounds, etc. 2, one thing I can bring or do to create that space. And 3, one thing I need to find in that space. During the synchronous workshop, participants will engage in facilitated discussion about the ideas and come to agreement about co-creative principles for being together in the workshop space. Next activity is a warm-up quiz. The goals of this activity are to provide space for participants to begin reflecting on their existing knowledge and to start thinking about some important topics related to the experience of disability. Using an online quiz platform, questions are posed to the group who can respond virtually. After each question, the overall responses are shared and the facilitator gives a short narrative about the question and some nuances to consider. This quiz is done using an app or clicker system that allows for anonymous responses and immediate tallying after each question. Next activity, defining disability. Think, pair, share. The goal of the activity is to open up a discussion about what disability is. In this and the following activity, participants have the opportunity to reflect on their own understanding, to receive other learners' understandings, and to possibly have their previous understandings challenged and to construct for themselves a new and possibly more informed understanding of what disability is. This is done through activity. Participants are asked to take 3 minutes to write a definition of disability. They are then instructed to pair up with another participant and discuss their definition for 5 minutes. Keeping in mind the following questions. What did the other person include that you did not? What do you like about each other's definition? Participants then rejoin the large group to engage in a discussion. The facilitators guide this conversation, using techniques to encourage input from various members as appropriate to the group dynamic they observe. The facilitators try to draw out a variety of perspectives. At the end of the discussion, participants are asked to share 1 or 2 words that resonate to them from the discussion. These are used to create a word cloud. Next is a break. It is important to take breaks during workshops of any kind, particularly one that has some content which might feel emotional for some people. Additionally, this models good practice for creating workshops that do not assume a normative expectation of productivity that is often encountered in academia. Wherever possible, breaks include refreshments. Next activity, understandings of disability. The goal is to introduce the concepts of medical individual, social affirmation, tragedy, and critical perspectives about disability, to draw connections between what participants already described in the discussion and word cloud and the concepts being introduced. Facilitators transition back into discussion about the definition of disability by reading out the word cloud or having a participant do so. The facilitator then acknowledges that there are various ways of understanding what disability is and that there is no single agreed definition, and introduces and describes medical, individual, social, affirmative, and critical approaches to understanding disability. A handout about disability is given at the beginning of this section so participants can refer to it in the future. The facilitators may address some of the questions or thoughts that have arisen. They may use personal stories to illustrate and will invite participants to share their own experiences and expertise as they relate to the discussion. Next activity, research-based theater. The goal is to open space for participants to become more aware of and challenge their assumptions about blind people and about belonging in academia, and to use an evidence-based creative medium to provide a space for affective learning, to promote empathy, to shift negative attitudes, and encourage action toward creating spaces where belonging is fostered. This portion of the workshop involves performance of the research-based theater, RBT, based on the research done as part of my dissertation. Following the workshop outline, this learning activity will be discussed more in depth. Next is another break. And then there is a placemat discussion, situational stories. To provide participants with an opportunity to learn through stories and reflection on how they might respond to a situation, and to learn with other participants through discussions of stories. Participants break into groups of four, and each group receives a scenario and a large placemat, a flip chart paper. Instructions are as follows. Read the scenario aloud. Divide the flip chart into sections, one for each group member. A space is left in the center. This is already done on the flip chart. For 2 minutes, group members independently brainstorm ideas responding to the questions that came with the scenario, writing in one of the sections of the flip chart. Group members rotate around the table, reading the responses of other participants and underlining or circling ideas or words that stand out, and drawing lines to connect ideas between sections as appropriate. For 8 minutes, discuss and collaboratively determine 2 key takeaways from the scenario and questions, and write these in the middle section. Groups share with one another their scenario and key takeaways. Next activity is the closing and post-assessment. The goal is to create or co-create a summary of the learnings from the workshop, review the learning objectives, and assess if there has been any change in participants' comfort level relative to the pre-assessment activity. The discussion in each group, in which each group shares their key takeaways from the scenario, is transitioned into a summary conversation. Participants are thanked for their engagement and informed that they will receive a follow-up email that includes resources mentioned as well as others. The learning objectives are revisited verbally and visually. Participants are asked to take 2 minutes to write down 3 strategies for making their own places of teaching and learning more welcoming for people with disabilities. Finally, participants are given a link and asked to fill out the feedback forms, and on their way out, to repeat the activity they did on their way in, but with the other color sticky note, rate their comfort level talking about disability. This concludes the workshop outline. Section 3.4, feedback. For the sake of transparency regarding the impact on participants, I'm including the following feedback from 2 offerings of the workshop. Quotations from participants will also appear in the following section to serve as examples of RBT's educational impact. Note that these are not data or research surveys, but rather are meant as feedback to improve my teaching. The following is feedback from the 2 offerings of this workshop. Section 3.4.1, 2019. 35 university staff, faculty, and students participated in this workshop, and all completed the feedback survey, which included open-ended questions, comment boxes, and Likert-style questions on a 1 completely disagree to 4 completely agree point scale. For all questions, the range was 3 to 4. The following is a table, which includes the question, the mode, the standard deviation, the median. I will be reading the median and the question. I learned from the workshop about defining disabilities. 3.56. I learned from the workshop about barriers and challenges for people with disabilities. 3.59. I learned from the workshop about strategies to make places more inclusive. 3.67. After the workshop, I feel more motivated than before to change something in my work environment to make it more welcoming. 3.85. I enjoyed participating in the workshop. 3.78. The facilitator was an effective teacher. 3.93. The following are narrative quotations. Any parts of the workshop that were most meaningful for you, representative examples are included. The introductions at the beginning were very meaningful for me because they acknowledged both the geospatial, cultural history of the space we were in, plus the personal history of the participants. Review of calls to action, pronouns, access needs. Acknowledgements and the narrative and varieties of experiences. Theater dissertation reading. Great to hear voices of people with disabilities. The screenplay part, excellent storytelling. Play, scenario dynamics, learning about legal matters. I appreciated the thoughtful nuances that were brought up by the facilitators. I really enjoyed the reading of the play. It was interesting to hear many different perspectives, and I definitely learned about some of the challenges that disabled people face. The part about tips from the community was especially helpful. It gives you a unique perspective. There was a lot of interaction, which I value. The introductions were a very powerful modeling, taking people into a learning space and setting community agreements. Practical tips, font size, telling people about cookies. Section 3.4.2, 2020. Six university teaching assistants participated in the workshop and all completed the feedback form, which included only open-ended questions and a space for comments. The best part of this workshop was, representative examples are included, the discussion of real-world scenarios because I could apply what I learned from the session to cases. Feeling safe and comfortable, examples of how to create sense of belonging, solidarity, TRC report, Braille, etc. The play, I Know I Belong When. It was moving, good insight on how it feels to have a disability. The space that was provided for reflection and connection. Learning how to support those with disabilities and how to ask what needs they might have and not assume because I want the classroom spaces to be places that are accessible and make students feel welcome. All the short skit, because it addressed a lot of experiences people with disabilities face, but also addressed the ways we as TABs and normies can be better. Tips and info about accessible presentation, because I wanted practical knowledge. Everything was really informative, from the beginning activity to the play. It was informative and precise on the topic. It changed certain assumptions I had and how to manage my classroom. Next question. If I could change anything about today's session, I would. All comments are provided. More content on the university setting and institutional structures and resources. Maybe have another exercise or example. It was great you did not force participants to speak. Nothing. Great workshop. Well done. And next question was, I also wanted to say or suggest. All responses are included. I enjoyed the diversity of activities we engaged in. I felt the workshop got off on the right foot by asking what people's access needs are. While the feedback thus far has been positive, a useful area for future exploration would be how theater such as this may or may not prove to be an effective as an intervention in this particular place where ableism plays out, specifically academia. Section 3.5, research-based theater as an affective learning tool. Section 3.5.1, what is RBT? Research-based theater, RBT, can at first read be understood as theater that is based on research. That is, however, far more complex it is, as RBT has become understood as method and methodology for sharing and creating knowledge. As a research tool, RBT is said to open spaces for empathetic power that, quote, enhance understanding of lived experience in different groups and communities. Mitchell et al., 2006, page 198. It humanizes data by maintaining the voices, stories, and unique humanities of those involved. RBT is more than using theater at the end of a project to share findings. RBT can also include incorporating theater at various phases in the process and inviting continued engagement in the research process throughout research phases. Section 3.5.2, why RBT and affective learning? In this section, I discuss the connection between RBT and affective learning, using examples and evidence from the workshop participants and from the literature. Bloom's taxonomy describes learning in three domains: affective, cognitive, and psychomotor. All three domains are addressed in the learning objectives of this workshop. The affective domain involves learner attitudes, beliefs, and values. Addressing affective learning objectives is often cited as a key challenge for both novice and experienced teachers. Affective learning outcomes can be addressed through witnessing others' perspectives and being open to challenging one's previously held beliefs, values, and attitudes. Noting RBT's empathetic power and strong foundation of evidence, I pursued RBT as an evidence-informed affective teaching tool. I'm not alone in this endeavor. For example, when Sigidin 2017 employed RBT in professional development with educators, their participants said RBT is more effective than traditional professional development for promoting long-lasting learning that provokes emotion and is oriented toward action. Bird and Donnellan 2020 found that the form of RBT they used, an interactive ethnographic performance, in a professional learning context fostered critical reflection and effective collective learning. Where RBT opens space of co-creation between audience and actor, RBT in the workshop context may enhance co-constructed knowledge between learners and facilitators. By prompting emotional and cognitive recall, RBT opens a space for learners to co-construct new affective knowledge. Through theater, learners are encouraged to consider and enter into perspectives of people who are different from themselves. As poignantly said by Wesley 2007, art and its celebration of what is different opens us to the possibility of imagining difference as something to be embraced rather than pushed away, page 15. In this workshop, I intentionally incorporated a variety of learning activities to address the learning objectives. Importantly, RBT alone does not necessarily impact transformational learning in the affective domain. It is important for the learner to also engage in self-reflection and dialogue. One participant noted that one highlight of the workshop for them was, quote, the space that was provided for reflection and connection. Pairing RBT and other active learning techniques invites participants to reflect on their own experiences of belonging, to consider how blind people's experiences are unique, and to ponder how these experiences intersect and how they might make shifts in their own practice. For example, one participant said, quote, I really enjoyed the reading of the play. It was interesting to hear many different perspectives, and I definitely learned about some of the challenges that disabled people face. Some active learning strategies engage the cognitive domain through dialogue and discussion, whereas RBT communicates through embodied, felt experience and enhances understanding and empathy. RBT also serves as a catalyst for further dialogue and, quote, deeper learning. Wesley 2007, page 17. For example, one participant commented in the summary conversation that she became more aware of the nuances of disabled people's experiences and was able to discuss this during the scenario activity. Considering again the process of stigmatization discussed in Chapter 1, this combination of active learning strategies and RBT addresses the cognitive and affective components of stereotyping and prejudice. Addressing these components may disrupt the stigmatization process, whereby prejudice and stereotyping based on a negative stigma become enacted through discrimination against blind or disabled people. Section 3.5.3, how was the RBT developed? The RBT in this workshop, I Know I Belong When, Stories of Authenticity, Performance, and Burdens, is based on conversations I facilitated with 35 blind and partially blind people from across North America, 28 focus group participants, 6 storytellers, 6 collaborators and co-creators, and me. The methods for this research are described in Chapter 2. The plots that developed through conversations and data analysis contributed to the RBT that you will read shortly. At the end of each storytelling conversation, I invited the storyteller to complete the sentence, "I know I belong when." This same question came up in each focus group and has been integrated as a key prompt in the workshop and RBT. Section 3.5.3.1, RBT creation sessions. Participants and other members of the blind community were invited to participate in creating research-based theater centered on the ideas and stories from the data, as well as their own. We had 2 sessions with a total of 6 participants. Prior to the session, participants were sent a summary of the research. During the session, participants were invited to participate in activities and conversation to develop ideas for a theatrical representation of the stories shared in the research. In the first session, we generated ideas, shared stories, and engaged as a community. Interestingly, we commented that while we were discussing belonging, a sense of belonging seemed to develop amongst session participants. After the first session, I worked with a theater artist and member of the UBC research-based theater cluster, Tetsuro, to develop an initial draft. I sent the draft to all participants and invited feedback via email from those who wanted to give it that way. At the session, I read aloud part of the script and we engaged in activities to share stories that built on those stories and diverged from them. We generated ideas and discussed possible theatrical elements that would enhance sharing of the stories. Following the second session, I worked with the ideas that had been generated and the first draft of the script to move toward a second version. I sent this second version to people who had participated in the session, inviting feedback and input. After integrating feedback, I sent the final version to all participants and again invited feedback. At this stage, 6 participants responded with messages of support, encouragement, and enthusiasm for the creative way of sharing stories. One participant made a small suggestion to improve the interactive component of the script. The first reading took place at UBC's Research-Based Theater Symposium. One part was read by me and the other by a blind person who participated in the sessions and community conversations that led to the research questions for this dissertation. Based on this reading, we made small adjustments to the script and theatrical components. Section 3.5.4, ethics. Vulnerability. Participating in focus groups, storytelling, and RBT sessions involves vulnerability as we reveal aspects of our identities and experiences that may open us up to ridicule or other negative outcomes. Vulnerability is, however, an essential part of co-creating the outcomes of research and in the end enriches the experience of those involved. DeFrancisco et al. State that based on our experiences, we believe that other qualitative researchers would benefit from acknowledging their own stories more fully before asking others to be vulnerable and share the stories of their lives, whatever the topic of study. 2007, page 241. Before sharing some of my story and identity with participants, or by sharing some of my story and identity with participants, I made myself vulnerable before asking them to do the same. Accessibility. A vital ethical consideration for this project was that of accessibility. I tried throughout the process to be attuned to access needs. For example, consent forms are traditionally provided in a print format. I provided consent forms electronically to participants, all of whom have had access to technology that allows them to read electronically. At the time of the focus group conversation or workshop, I offered to read the consent form aloud and recorded participants' consent to participate based on the electronically reviewed consent form. Another example of accessibility comes in the way we interact. We engaged together using simple gestures of belonging that, although unusual in non-blind contexts, are expected in the context of the blind community. For example, when we enter or leave a space or come up alongside someone, we announce who we are. Another example is that at the workshop, I provided snacks and made sure that all participants knew what was available and where it was. Section 3.5.5, trustworthiness. Some of the techniques we use to promote trustworthiness in the work include member reflections, crystallization, reflexivity, praxis, and voice. I invited community members to participate in all stages of the research process. This was important as the knowledge was built together. Participants ultimately chose the level of involvement that worked for them. I acknowledge that these, quote, choices were shaped by personal constraints in their lives. I used member reflections to promote representation of all our voices in the construction of knowledge. Member reflections were an opportunity for us to collaborate and elaborate on findings, as opposed to ensuring that we got it right. Praxis involves connecting knowledge with action. According to Lincoln et al. 2011, research can be judged in part on its ability to stimulate change and decrease ignorance by elucidating previously silenced or unheard voices. Thus, I examine my research in regard to its ability to expose experiences of reality previously misunderstood or underrepresented. Crystallization, gathering data from various sources, was used to enhance the outcomes of this research. Crystallization contrasts with triangulation in that the aim is not to improve accuracy or get a true picture of a particular reality that exists, but rather to increase the amount of data and gain multiple perspectives such that it is possible to construct thicker description of phenomena being explored. This is based upon the idea that realities are not more or less true, rather they are more or less informed. Finally, throughout the process, I had reflective conversations, and kept reflexive notes containing observations, critical reflections, and feelings regarding the process and the data. Because readers and audience are also co-constructors of knowledge, integrating insights from the aforementioned notes in my writing and the RBT may allow readers to have a greater understanding of the values that may have shaped how I represent stories. Section 3.6, RBT. I know I belong when. Stories of authenticity, performance, and burdens. This section describes the RBT used in the workshop. Some elements described in the workshop outline and the RBT outline may be used in different combinations, depending on the context for each instance of the workshop and performance. Additionally, alternatives were developed to adapt the play for online performance, and an audio version was created and is included in this dissertation. The variation described in the text-based version of this dissertation is for an in-person workshop. Whatever variations are used, we want to incorporate involvement of participants and critical thinking. The overall aim of the play is to promote empathy, shift negative attitudes, and encourage action toward creating spaces that foster belonging. Acknowledgements. 35 individuals contributed their stories to the research that forms the foundation for the play I Know I Belong When, Stories of Authenticity, Performance, and Burdens. Additionally, audiences and participants who engaged with early iterations of the script contributed their feedback, leading to further growth of the piece. The script was developed by Laurie von Balk with support from Tetsuro Shigematsu and the research-based theater cluster at the University of British Columbia. Section 3.6.2, cast, setting, props. There are three roles in this play: performer A / Kendra, performer B / Ava, and the participants. Wherever possible, performers A and B are people from the disabled community, and the performers are compensated. The performance is set in a neutral space with two chairs, a blazer, a weight or dumbbell, a bag, and a table if possible. The participants are in a circle with a large gap, which is the stage. Note that the following section is 3.6.3 is about navigating the script, that is the print version of the script. To promote accessibility of the script, several strategies were used. Note some of the script formatting may have changed to fit the dissertation. Level 2 headings were used for major sections of the document, level 3 for subsections, including different scenes throughout the script. Visual strategies may assist those who wish to use their sight to navigate the document. The script was font size 33 and with 1.5 line spacing, 6-point space after each paragraph. These settings are adjusted in accordance with the access needs of performers. The two main characters are indicated in different colors. Performer B / Ava is highlighted in yellow, and performer A / Kendra is in dark green font with an underline. Stage directions and other notes are in italics and highlighted in light blue, separated from the dialogue as bullet points. Different possibilities for how a section can be played out are in dark orange or brown font. Prior to each performance, the performers will discuss each of the options and choose one depending on the physical space, participants, and performers. Section 3.6.4 in the printed or text-based dissertation consists of the script. However, this will not be read aloud here, as an audio version of the play is included as a supplementary material, and listeners are encouraged to listen to that. Note that the audio version was created in collaboration with Amy Amantia, who reads performer B / Ava, and Edward Norman, who gave great assistance with editing the audio files, as well as numerous volunteers who read short lines for the introduction. Thank you. Section 3.7, Reflections on Co-creating Spaces of Belonging. Section 3.7.1, Workshopping the BAM. Participants could read an article outlining the BAM, its pedals, and the barriers and facilitators mentioned in Chapter 2. However, the workshop format fosters active learning and the RBT engages affect, and together these may more readily engender action. The BAM pedals appear throughout the workshop, in discussions and in the RBT. This workshop format allows participants to actively consider how they develop a sense of belonging and how it might develop for others. Considering the BAM explicitly, participants can identify ways in which they can better facilitate the development of belonging by specifically considering aspects of the pedals. Participants have differing spheres of influence, but all participants can contribute to spaces of belonging, especially in the middle three pedals: familiarity, acceptance, and trusting connections and interdependent relationships. The first pedal, affiliation, is, and the final, sense of equity, may be places where participants have less perceived influence. It is, however, important to consider carefully the influences they may actually have in these domains. For example, a participant who plays a role in determining content for a program's admissions website can consider proposing language that would invite disabled applicants because of the unique and valuable knowledge, experience, and perspectives they bring. This could contribute to affiliation because a disabled person may be more likely to apply. Section 3.7.2, Reflections on the Stories. I Know I Belong When, Stories of Authenticity, Performance, and Burdens is based on stories from blind people in academia and aims to share some of the unique aspects of what belonging is like for blind and disabled people in academia. I reflect on this section, in this section, about some of the main ideas in the play. However, this section is not meant to replace the RBT with a reiteration of the findings and discussion of these themes. The RBT presents the findings, albeit in an unconventional way for those steeped in mainstream academic ways of knowing and sharing knowledge. While the scenes are titled as if to signal binary experiences, for example, feeling like a burden versus a contributor, it is clear that people do not experience academic life in a series of binaries. For example, one might feel able to authentically express some aspects of their identity while still performing others. In the process of doing this research and conversations following performance of the RBT, it struck me that there are many commonalities across experiences of disabled and non-disabled people in academia, particularly those from equity-seeking communities. For example, Archer 2008 describes younger academics' experiences of inauthenticity in academia, particularly related to the ways neoliberalism in academia demands certain performance standards and outputs. Also similar to the stories of blind people in academia, Rickett and Morris 2020 tell of the additional work or extra burdens working class women carry in academia. Goffman 1963 discusses the concept of passing in his work about identity and stigma management. It is a process by which people conceal stigmatized aspects of their identities and as a result receive treatment based on the false assumption that they do not belong to a discreditable group. The idea of passing, quote, instances in which a person, usually a minority, is falsely assumed to be a member of the majority, Tatum 2014, is not limited to disabled people. The inauthentic experiences and need to perform and pass described by Archer's participants were also related to gender, race, class, and status within the institution. In our stories, we questioned belonging, asking, quote, do I want to belong into this? Lamont 2019 describes being an academic embodied as, quote, black, female, slight of stature, young, and occasionally pregnant, page 182, and having her belonging challenged early in her academic career. She goes on to say that her, quote, state of not belonging has changed from one of alienation to one of critical distance and engagement. Being a member of the collective endowed with the capacity to interrogate and confront the group's unexamined and unspoken assumptions. Lamont 2019, page 182. Perhaps another avenue for exploration is choice around belonging. One might prefer to belong in some ways while choosing to remain what Lamont refers to as a stranger in other ways. Here I note the contextual nature of choice. Opportunities to choose where one belongs and what occupations we engage in are inequitably distributed. Interestingly, in examples discussed above and in many conversations about diversity in academia, disability remains unmentioned. Disabled people are framed as unexpected in academia, which Stone, Crooks, and Owen describe as, quote, a place for able-bodied workers, 2013, page 167. Bruce, 2017, page 173, describes disabled students, quote, pervasive sense that their physical embodiment and ways of learning and doing were not expected on campus, which created a troubling sense that they were not universally perceived as students who belonged. Although some of the experiences of blind people and people from other equity-seeking groups may bear similarities, the RBT reveals that some of the unique aspects of these experiences for blind people. Section 3.7.3, Reflections about Feedback. Inviting, receiving, reflecting over, and integrating feedback is an important practice in which I engage as a teacher. For example, receiving very positive feedback about the workshop introduction activity, I continue to use it and have started adapting it for other contexts. One participant particularly highlighted that they appreciated how the activity acknowledged the, quote, geospatial cultural history of the space, and also the participants' personal histories. Hearing this from a few people, I decided to be more explicit about my intention to do so. Having heard both through verbal comments and in written feedback that participants appreciated the tips from the community, I have decided to develop a handout that shares some of these tips so participants can refer to this in the future. I also reflected about feedback that some participants wanted more information about the university context and institutional policies, practices, and resources. It is also important to me that this workshop not move toward being an information gathering opportunity. Therefore, I am also going to create a handout with links and explanations regarding those institutional pieces so participants can refer to this. Section 3.7.4, concluding reflections. I have come to both enjoy and realize the value of RBT in combination with other interactive and intentional teaching tools for creating change. I recognize that change happens at different levels and that, as a few blind participants said, awareness education has been going on for decades and still there remain barriers. So, while I do not claim that RBT or this workshop will solve that, I have witnessed change occur as a result. For example, a colleague who is part of an organization that hosts a conference for about 15,000 students realized after engaging in one of the RBT performances that their organization should add to the registration a place for people to share their access needs. A faculty member who witnessed these stories made a point of letting me know who they were when we met in a new setting. These small gestures of belonging certainly made a difference for me. Based on the feedback I have received, I think that participants and audiences have taken what they learned and applied it to other settings as well, spreading those small gestures of belonging and perhaps some larger changes too. To build on this work, future studies could examine the longer-term impact of these workshops and of RBT on participant and audience actions and attitudes. It would also be beneficial to explore the potential impact of the workshop and RBT on shifts in workplace cultures, for example. These RBT stories are our stories. They are my story. While I tried to ensure the stories were grounded within the diverse perspectives of participants, as the main author of the RBT, and my perspective certainly influences the stories told. I identify with all of the themes expounded upon in the RBT, but perhaps not all the perspectives or dimensions of the experiences of being blind and belonging in academia. I performed versions or portions of the RBT in various settings and for and with various people throughout the development process in workshops and RBT symposium in the defense of this dissertation and a small part of it in the 3-minute thesis competition. As an insider, a blind scholar, there was some blurring, to use a pun, of the lines between who I am and a character I played. I will explore the idea of insiderness more in Chapter 4. I do not explicitly differentiate for audiences which of the stories I identify with, and which I perhaps do not. Another interesting avenue for exploration is how engaging in this kind of insider performance and education might impact the performer teacher, and how having an insider perform the RBT and facilitate discussion might impact the engagement of participants. For example, although I employ strategies to mitigate this impact, such as opportunities to submit anonymous questions and small group discussions, participants might feel less free to ask honest questions that might offend me, a blind scholar. This concludes the reading of Chapter 3.